Hi, welcome back to another episode of You the Mother podcast by Abby Williams, a space dedicated to supporting, empowering, and connecting all parents in all seasons of parenthood. You can find more supportive content over on Instagram at You the Mother, and be sure to check out youthemother.com, where you can reach out to work with me one-on-one or sign up for my group coaching. In this week's episode, I am welcoming on Stephanie Rosenfield. Stephanie is a former speech pathologist turned life coach for overwhelmed moms who helps her clients navigate the internal and external chaos that often creeps up during motherhood without losing their ish. Using firsthand experience, training as a certified life coach, and an honest, judgment-free approach, Stephanie helps moms shift their habits and mindset to become the calm AF mom they've always hoped they could be. In this week's episode, Stephanie walks us through how to deal with the compare and despair in mom life. Stephanie helps us deconstruct social expectations, the type of expectations many mothers have internalized and end up bringing excess pressure and guilt into their day-to-day life, how to begin identifying and deconstructing these to create a model and lifestyle that works for you. And she helps us examine the expectations you can adopt as your own regarding your children's education, nutrition, everything, by letting go of the need for external validation to know if you're doing a good job. You can find Stephanie over on her podcast, wherever you're listening to this podcast, The 5-Minute Shift for Moms. You can also find her on Instagram at stephanie.rosenfield. And on her website, stephaniercoaching.com. For listeners who are interested in working with Stephanie, you are invited to book a complimentary consult call using the link in the description of this podcast. I hope that you enjoy this episode, and if you do, please be sure to leave a 5-star rating and review. Your support here on the podcast always means the world to me, and I so appreciate you being here. So let's get started in supporting you, the mother. Stephanie, welcome to You, the Mother podcast. I am so excited to be having this conversation with you today because I think that this is a pretty universal topic that a lot of us, I would say most of us, all of us, struggle with, and that is combating compare and despair. So thank you so much for joining me. But first, tell my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, Abby. I'm so excited to be here. I am a life coach for overwhelmed moms. I like to say I help moms stop losing their minds and start to enjoy motherhood, right? Which is like the hashtag goals, I think, of why all of us wanted to become moms in the beginning. So that's what I do.
So when we're talking about combating some of this compare and despair, what are we talking about? Let's first identifier.
Yeah. So when I talk about compare and despair, it's the constant looking around us. It can be comparing ourselves as moms to other moms, comparing our kids to other kids, comparing our life experiences or our homes to other homes. So it's really looking around. And I think the first indicator is like, I am lacking in some way because I am not, they are not, we are not this other way. And as a new mom, I really struggled with this. My kids are 6 and almost 3 now. And when my 6-year-old was a couple months old, like I started to care about things that I never cared about. Like the sink being empty, my counter being clean. Before that, those were things that I never really thought about. Walking into other people's home, right? Just these, I remember when my youngest was 2, going to a soccer game and looking around, he was 2, right, at the soccer game. And all the other kids are listening and sitting and paying attention. And mine's like running around smelling the roses. And my immediate thought was like, there's something wrong. Yeah. When in actuality, like there's nothing wrong. He's 2.
He's a 2-year-old.
And it's not developmentally appropriate for him to sit and listen. But it was just that automatic, like, look at the others and he's not.
Yeah, I think I can identify this to like my motherhood as well. And I think like, so for myself, I have 2 different like walks in my motherhood where my first like experience into motherhood with my first. He's going to be 13 this summer. And I was a young mom with him. So I had him when I was 21 years old. And 13 years ago, there wasn't like the social media that there is today. And so I didn't have like the social media compare trap that I think a lot of our modern motherhood does. And I can identify that in like my current walk with my littles now. But back then, I feel like I was similar where I was having some of these expectations of myself or like things that I had to prove that I belonged in motherhood, right? Because I was a young mom and because I was starting out maybe different than like the traditional route, right? I was still in college. I wasn't married. And I feel like I had to dress him in certain ways. And I just like had to have like this appearance that like I had it all together. And now it's like so funny because the things that I do now that I compare myself with are completely different where like I don't give a crap what my kids wear, you know, like they're wearing Target and hand-me-downs now, where I am like more financially stable and like maybe I could afford like the clothes that I was buying back then when I could not afford that. But I don't know. It's just like really silly. I think like some of the things that we get wrapped up in that one, maybe aren't aligned to ourselves and two, like just don't really matter.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess like how do we kind of break ourselves from some of these expectations or maybe like find ourselves like in that track, right? And like pause ourselves like, hey, you don't need to be doing this.
Yeah. And I think it's right. That's like the first step is like the awareness. And yeah. I think for a lot of us, it can feel so tricky. I had a client who has two boys and she went to a friend's house who has three kids. And she walked into her house after school and she's like, it was so quiet. It was so quiet. Each kid was doing their own thing. They were all relaxing. My house, it's like a cyclone went off after school. The kids are running around. So without even recognizing it, without even realizing that she was comparing and it was causing her so much turmoil and thinking what was wrong with her and her family, she was feeling so terrible about it. Yeah. And the first thing that we did together was identify that one, that's what she was doing, right? Mm-hmm. And the idea of why is that better? Like, why is that something you want? Mm-hmm. Versus what is so special and unique about your kids that they do have this energy and this wanting to play together and wanting to be around you and just a different personality.
Right.
And that's not bad.
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Do you think that, you know, like when we're talking about social media, especially in like our modern motherhood, I just feel like there's so many spaces that we can kind of plug into and get into this comparison trap. Are there some things that we can do to maybe boundary ourselves around some of these things so that we don't fall into that?
Yes. I mean, I think there is not one upside of social media. I read an article that even if you're following like cat memes and cute dogs, like there is still no emotional upside. So I think the expectation of recognizing how am I feeling while I am on this app, while I'm looking at this family, while I'm looking at this home, right? How, what am I getting off when I close that app? How am I feeling? What am I wanting to do? Am I like wanting to like go on Target and order a whole new wardrobe or go rearrange my kitchen? So I think the first step is recognizing how do I feel? And one of the things I tell my clients is what, before going on, what is my purpose? Why am I going on right now? Am I looking for inspiration? Am I looking to connect with other friends? And to really move through that purpose, message a friend that you haven't spoken to in a while, comment on a picture, right? Because I think it's social media is meant to be addictive. They know what they're doing when they've created the app. There's that whole Netflix series, right, about the social, whatever it's called. It is created to be addicted and to hack our brains. So we're really working against technology here. So it's creating that awareness of, why am I going on? What is my purpose? And the recognition of what you're seeing. And we all know this. You're seeing a highlight reel. You're seeing that one perfectly posed photo out of 100 that didn't make the cut.
Right. I know. I think like during one of my postpartums, I was very big into I need to start making more time for me And like, and that was a real thing. I really needed to do that. You know, I needed to find some way to start caring for myself. I had multiple children and my time was very limited. My three that I had after my first, they were like back to back. So I had 3 in 3 years. So it was very just like whirlwind, lose yourself, don't have time for yourself. You need to take care of yourself. You're pouring from an empty cup, right? And I got like so sucked into like yogi accounts or just like this like mindfulness, meditation, quiet, zen. And I love that. I love like looking at your highlights and your reels and all of it. I find it like soothing and I love it. But I also have to be very mindful with myself that I do get into comparison traps, especially when I was in that season of motherhood. That like the only way I could care for myself was if I was going to wake up an hour before my children and sit in this beautiful Zen corner with candles and I'm meditating and I've got an herbal tea and maybe I'm journaling and I'm just like so centered and like in tune with myself, right? That was never going to happen for me in this season. It's still like still those 3 and 3 years are now 6, 5, and 3. And I'm like, still, I'm not there. I need sleep still. You know what I mean? So I'm like, I'm not waking up before my children. That maybe will never happen for me. But especially during these little years, I have to prioritize my sleep. And so like, where am I going to fit this in a different space? I have to figure that out. And that has looked different in different seasons. And I feel like my kids are getting more independent where I can kind of take some time for myself and they can go play and deal with themselves for a little bit. But back then, like that was really hard, you know?
Yeah. I love that you brought that up because I think that a lot of moms too, when we're like, okay, I need to create more time for mm-hmm. self-care for myself. I need to wake up earlier than my kids. And for a lot of us, like, and then we see, right? Then we can see the people on Instagram, like my morning routine with like celery juice and like meditated before like 6 a.m. And you're like, oh my gosh, like I can't, like that's what I should be doing. And I'm not doing it. And the recognition that like as one, what does my body need right now? My body needs sleep. That is actually self-care. You giving your body that sleep, that extra hour of sleep, is giving yourself the self-care that you needed.
Right.
Right. And as humans, I think that as a like societal, right? I call us like fish. We're all fish in an ocean, right? And we're just following the other fish around. And what we need to start doing is looking around and being like, do I want to be like these other fish? Do I like what are they going towards a shark? Mm-hmm. Like, where are these fish going versus blindly swimming after them? Right. So, when you're looking around and pushing yourself and waking up and exhausted and not enjoying that meditation or feeling more depleted, mm-hmm. it's not giving you what you actually are seeking right. out. It's not giving you that energy that you're seeking out. You're just checking it off the list. And as humans, society pushes habits, but humans aren't consistent creatures. Like we are inconsistent. So the idea that we're going to wake up and do the same thing day after day, and that's good and that's better, is setting us up for failure because that's not who we are or what we do.
I love that you bring that up. You know, I had a podcast episode recently with Dr. Morgan Francis who talked about body image issues and diet culture and like same kind of thing, you know, of why diets fail and, you know, why they don't work. And I think that like that same mindset can be used in so many different areas of our life, right? Mm-hmm. It's because we are so inconsistent, you know, and so it's not you that's failing. Yeah. It's this diet, you know, of like your life, food, whatever is like the diet, right? We can put that label on lots of different things. But I think that if you just like are intuitive, you know, because she talked about like intuitive eating being, you know, kind of where we need to be. And I think that, you know, if we kind of plug that into other areas of our life where we're just intuitive with our self-care, our parenting, you know what I mean? And plug that in, we're maybe set up for success a little bit more.
Yeah, I love that you bring that up, Abby, because I often say that society doesn't set us up to be successful moms.
True.
We're expected to be house cleaners and professional, like what child development experts right. now, right? Everyone's expected to like know how to respond to their kids and chefs and interior designers and, you know, container store experts. The expectations when you look around us, when you look on social media, when you look even peers, it really doesn't set us up for success. And we're not, sort of to your point about being intuitive, we're not asking ourselves, what do I want and why? What is important to me? And I use this example. So I don't put my laundry away. I don't. I live out of a clean clothes bin. And it's amazing. It works for me, right? At the end of the night, I ask myself, if I see a messy kitchen, what is my minimum enoughness? What is minimum enough tonight? And maybe that's just an empty sink, but I'm not cleaning up, right? So instead of I should, I'm expected to, this is part of my job, this is my responsibility, it's sort of going against the expectations, in air quotes here, and asking what is important to me and my family and why.
Yeah, yeah. That's something that I work with my clients as well with. I work with clients around estrangement. I talk about my estrangement with my mother a lot on my platform. And just getting really aligned with your priorities, I think, is one of the most important things that you can do across the board, especially for this comparison trap, right? You know, because I think like there's good guilt that comes up in our parenting journey and there's bad guilt that comes up in your parenting journey. And some of that good guilt is like that little spotlight that says, hey, you yelled at your kids and you don't want to be the yelly mommy. What can we do to, you know, repair this or, you know, prevent this from happening next time? What are some things that we can put in place for ourselves? How can we be more mindful with how our emotions are coming up in our body and shift differently next time, right? That's some of that good guilt that you can learn and grow from. And it's a tool to use as like you move forward. And then some of that bad guilt is when, you know, we're living outside of our values and outside of the things that are aligned with us. And so, you know, I think that that can be used, again, in a lot of different areas of our life. I talk about it in estrangement when people are a lot like, you know, am I making the right choices? Or you're going to hear a lot of different things from different people. And, you know, just really coming back to what are my values and the things that I'm prioritizing and how am I going to live from there? And I think that that's so important.
I love that you bring that up too, because so many women, so the women mm-hmm. that I coach also aren't used to being asked mm-hmm. those questions and answering it based on what mm-hmm. they think. They're used to answering that based on what other people want. Their husbands, their families, the society, their peers around them, what they think they right. should want versus what's important
right.
to them.
Right. I know, you know, and I think a lot of our generation are like cycle breakers where we're doing things different than the previous generation. And so it is important to be like getting really, really clear about what those things are for you. Stephanie, I'm curious about like when we're examining the expectations that maybe we've adopted, in our past, how do you feel like we can examine those things for us? You know, when we're talking about expectations for our kids, for education, for all kinds of different things, how can we start examining those things for us?
Yes. So that's a fabulous question. And we've adopted, and most of our mindset around education and things around our kids are subconsciously adopted from our upbringing, right? It's things we didn't really choose to put there that we're living out. And I had a client who son has ADHD, and she would get so frustrated with him around homework and grades, wishing that he could be different and sort of getting really strict and stern when he couldn't complete his homework. And what she recognized through our work together was that why is this homework so important to me, right? Why is him sitting and completing it? Why is this important? There's a lot of research around homework saying that it actually isn't that right. helpful or isn't that important, right? So just because, like, again, her own mindset, the teacher says it should be done and it has to be based on, you know, what the teacher says. And so it's questioning, what do I think and why? Why is homework, why are grades important mm-hmm. to me? And we talk a lot about a lot of the clients I work with have really high education standards for their kids. And we talk about them going to a good college and getting a good job. And it's like, why? Well, then they'll be successful. Well, what does successful mean? Doesn't equate happiness. So you keep going down that line and questioning, okay, these things that I thought were important to me and important to my family that are actually causing more disconnection and arguments. She wasn't connecting with her son. They weren't enjoying each other. Every night they were both dreading it. Wasn't actually getting her closer to what she wanted, which was connecting with her kid and helping him academically. So I think part of breaking these cycles is questioning sort of like that fish analogy. Am I just following the fish and doing what they say and heading toward a shark? Or is this, why is this important to me? And that's not to say that, oh yeah, never do homework, academics, I don't care about academics, right? It's not like all or nothing. But there's this in between where now she can speak to the teacher and talk about his difficulty, and he has 5 questions instead of 25. And she talks to her son about, okay, what could make this easier for you? What's my role in this? How can I help you? So it's more collaborative. Instead of getting caught up in the should, this is what it should be like, and this is why.
Right. And I think that some of those things like change, you know what I mean? I think that like maybe like they change at different seasons, and then there's like different circumstances where like it doesn't have to be like this one rule that like the homework is so important all the time, right? And just like really being child focused and like listening and just like so intentional. You know, I can give an example of, you know, I think that we as a society really prioritize all these extracurriculars for our kids right now. And I have a lot of feelings about that. That's probably a whole other podcast episode. But, and I think that, you know, some of the things of, you know, you join a team, you honor your commitments, you know, like those are kind of like programming or messaging that maybe you received as a child. And I think that there are some benefits to living like that, right? You honor your commitments. And I think that you can honor when it's not serving you, right? And so we signed my oldest up for soccer this spring. And we pulled up to his first soccer practice, and he looked at me before getting out of the car, and he's like, I don't want to do this. And he's got a heavy school academic load this year. Sixth grade is a lot harder. He's in volleyball. He's in scouts, and he was going to do soccer. He's like, this is too much. And I said, okay. And I just turned the car back on, and we pulled out, and we did not honor that commitment. You know what I mean? And I think like it was a really like amazing moment, I feel like, where I could have either said, no, we signed up, you honor your commitments, whatever. And I just felt so called to honor him and his need in that moment. And so I just think that like really being mindful of what's happening here and using it as an opportunity to really get in that boat with your kid, right? And what...
That's such a beautiful example. Right. Because it's not only for, you know, your response, but what that's teaching him. It's teaching him that what he thinks and what he feels, and when something doesn't feel right to him, that that matters. Not to ignore that feeling and push through. And you could imagine if he learns to listen to that part of him, that when he, in 5, 10, 15 years, when he's working, you know, that how many more times that he can listen to himself and feel empowered enough to say that, and that the other person actually listens, and that he should listen to that part of him. That's so special.
Yeah. And I think it kind of goes back to that compare and despair, you know, because I think it's really easy to get caught up in that, even for the tiny people, you know, who are just like so over involved right now. This generation is so involved. And, you know, I think that that's something that they can get wrapped up in too, of I need to be doing all the extra things and I need to be go, go, go. And do we want to produce another generation of just overproducers, you know, hustle culture, or do you want to produce a generation that does validate their needs, that does rest when they need to rest and doesn't feel guilty about it? You know what I mean? Like, I would love to not feel guilty when I'm just sitting. Yes. Do you work with people on that, on how to kind of break some of that guilt when we are doing nothing?
I do. And it's so pervasive, right? Even within my friend group, I was chatting with a mom who's a teacher and she's saying how she is off this summer. And she's like, what am I going to do with my time? I'm like, well, what about like sitting in bed and reading a book? She's like, oh my gosh, I wish, but I would just feel too guilty. And I think it's just so pervasive now with kids, that hustle culture of I should be doing the laundry, I should be organizing the house. There are so many things on my to-do list. And that keeps you in this, while it may feel like you get that dopamine hit in the moment, you're like, yes, I completed that. It keeps you in this high stress movement. So you're not actually coming down. You're not actually relaxing. And I have my clients track how then they are presenting as a mom, right? One of the examples that I can use is a client who, she felt really guilty not going to the playground with her kids and her husband on a Saturday. She's like, I have to go. It's family time. I can't miss out. And I'm like, well, how are you there? She's like, well, my kids are, I'm not the mom I want to be. I was like, let's try something. You just one time, let's be a detective. This weekend, you just stay home and we'll see what happens. You don't have to keep doing it. The next week she got on the call and she was like, oh my gosh, it was the best thing. Like, I was such a better mom when they came home because I took that time. So I think the lie that we tell ourselves is I should be, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. It's better for them. It's better for me. Yeah. And then while you're resting, while you're sitting there, I should be like, your mind is like spinning. I should be doing so many other things, which doesn't allow you to rest versus this is exactly where I'm supposed to be. Doing this is, I am as important as them. I will be a better mom and wife giving this time to myself. So I think a big part of it is that mindset that you have while taking that break. And I say this to moms who yell too. I'm like, okay, like when you leave the room, don't spin about how insane everyone is. Right. Tell yourself, I can handle this. I can cope with this. That's when you can enter the room and be a little bit more calm and receptive. Similarly, when you're taking that time to yourself, this is for them and this is for me.
Yeah. Stephanie, I feel like so much of motherhood is the invisible load, right? We talk about the mental load of motherhood. We talk about, you know, all these other things. And so getting validation in motherhood can feel very far and few between, especially when so much of what we're doing is nobody can even see it, right? And so I guess I see a lot with moms of maybe some of the things that we're doing is to seek some of this external validation. And I think it makes sense when we feel underappreciated, burnt out, crispy, we're taking on way too much. But how do we kind of shift out of this place of needing external validation?
I love that you brought that up. And I think that part of how we were raised and who we are is the constant external validation that we got as humans, starting with our parents. Good job, you know, a good job for this. In school, an A+, 100, a 95. In careers that you may have had, feedback from bosses. And, you know, we were constantly given external feedback for our performance, for everything that we did. And then we became moms. Right. And it's the only, it's like the only job or responsibility that we're not, that like the external feedback, one, isn't really coming. And when it does come, we're like, it's through my kids' behaviors. We think my kids' behaviors and my husband's words are the feedback. So if we surprise our kids with an ice cream party and they're not thrilled and they're like crying about something else, right? You're like,
you're so ungrateful.
You're so ungrateful. You're so ungrateful. Exactly. Like, you should be happy, right? If they're upset about something that you think is, you know, I use in air quotes, irrational. And I talk about this too, right? Like, when I got married, I was fired by an Etsy vendor because I was too high maintenance over like cocktail napkins. And I'm like, there are so many times I was, irrational about things that meant a lot to me. Yet we blame our kids all the time for being, you know, upset and, again, air quotes, irrational about things, but using their behaviors as our measuring stick and waiting for our husband's words as a measuring stick. And that will always leave us feeling yeah. less than, feeling like we're not living up because it's not our kids' responsibility right. to give us that feedback. They're little, like they're little humans growing. So it's about giving ourselves that feedback, mm-hmm. the recognition of I'm doing a good job, and it's against your measuring stick. For example, my husband, I don't do my husband's yeah. laundry. I was talking to another, I was on another podcast actually, and she had a hard time with this. She's like, you don't do his laundry? I was like, I don't do it. It was funny. I was like, no, I don't do his laundry.
Every family runs how they need to run.
Every family does different, yeah. right? And we talked about it, right? And again, it's not just like me being like, I'm not doing this, you're doing this. It's like, hey, I'm feeling overwhelmed here. How can we like share a little bit more of the load? I'm just going to do mine. Can you start to? Sure, right? So it's also the recognition of other people can be upset and that's okay. My responsibility, my livelihood isn't to make other people happy. Right? Because then if I was just doing it to get that like, good job, Steph, versus what can I handle? What do I need? Like, that's when I give myself the good job. Like, good job, Steph. So, and I think this is a huge transition. I know it was for me to start giving myself that validation for myself. But that's when you're going to start seeing the yeah. shift.
Are there some ways that I guess, like, we can be strengthening some of that internal validation, right? I can like think of myself how I think like a lot of us are walking around with a very loud inner critic. You're not doing enough. You're not good enough. You're not worthy. You know, we're like constantly seeking validation for our fear. And like this inner critic is really loud, right? And so it's like I have 4 kids, so I'm going to drop the ball every week on something, you know, and I think like I've done a lot of healing work and a lot of therapy and a lot of stuff on myself over the past 3 years, especially to where my inner critic still comes up, but I can talk back to my inner critic now. But I think a lot of us, you know, maybe when you do show up messy, maybe when you do yell at the kid or you forget to pack their lunch, and you're like, oh my gosh, see, you're the worst mom ever. You have nothing together. We forgot one of my kids' art shows last week. To be fair, she had 3 different art shows for 3 different of her classes, and it was insanity. And we had one for another kid. So I'm like, great, right, we got 4 in 1 week. We missed one. I feel all right. But for a lot of parents, I'm sure, like, if you forgot to show up there, you would just feel like the world's worst parent, right? Uh-huh. And so, you know, so I think that we have a lot of that going on where you just feel like you have to be perfect all the time. When you don't show up perfect, that inner critic is validated that, like, see, you're fill in the blank, whatever is your fear. So are there things that you suggest to do to kind of strengthen some of that validation for ourselves and some of that positive self-talk to combat that inner critic guy? Yeah.
Yes. I call my inner critic Regina yeah. George. I don't yep. know if you've ever seen yep. Mean Girls, right? I'm like, she is such a Regina Mine is George, too, yeah. right? Like, yes, yes. And I think that's so we automatically assume worst intent yeah. of ourselves. That is our go-to.
Which
and
is never the case.
Never. Never
You're
the case,
never showing right? up like, I don't even want to go to the art show. Like, that's never happening.
We're automatically assuming worst intent, which is so interesting. And if you have like a weighted scale, this is the weight, the heavy, the more I have my hands up here because I'm like showing you, but we give so much more negative feedback to ourselves, which therefore translates to people around us than positive. So when I talk to my clients, it's about let's tip the scale. It's never going to go to zero. The inner critic, this Regina, she's always going to be there. But the idea is sort of what you said is it gets quieter and you have the ability to talk back to her, to have a conversation with her. So the first thing that I do with my clients is most of them have never, I'm like, why are you a good mom? They're like, ah. I'm not. Most of them have,
I'm not. Yeah.
Right. Most of them can't think of 10 reasons why they are good, why they, right? So the first thing I would have someone do is sit down and write these things that you think that you're lacking at. Tell me the 10 reasons why you are good, why you are, maybe not why you're amazing. You can't go from I hate myself to I love myself, or I'm a bad mom to I'm a fabulous mom, but I am a mom. I love my kids. I provide for them. I try my best. And what I have them start doing is each night is coming up with the 10 things or 5 or 2 that they did well that day. Today, I apologized after I yelled.
Yeah.
Right? So building up the evidence for the thing opposite of what they think themselves. Yeah. Of themselves. Yeah. And then, and I, one of my clients explained this so well. She said that she was driving by down the street with her son and he saw friends playing outside and he wasn't invited, right? He wasn't invited to that play date. And her brain started to go to, he doesn't have friends. Kids don't like him. Why wasn't he invited? I'm doing something wrong. Like that place. And she's like, but instead of one shunning those thoughts, being like, I shouldn't think that, he's great. She allowed them to be there. Okay. You can be there. And what else is true? He had a play date last weekend. He has a lot of friends, right? She allowed herself to hear that and then ask, and what else is true? Mm-hmm. Which immediately calmed her down in the moment.
So important. So important. That inner critic is loud. That compare and despair is loud at times, but there are so many good tips here, Stephanie, to combat some of these things, to rewire our brain, to reprogram our self-talk. So thank you so much for having this conversation with me.
And I would just add, like, the idea, the compare and despair isn't ever going to go fully away. I'm not sitting here being like, I never compare and despair. Like, that happens to me. I go on Instagram and I see another family on a beach, right? And it's like, right? It's, I don't think it's ever going to fully go away. But the idea of, like, one, the acceptance, this can be here and it's fine. I know we, like, my family goes, right? Like, we go on great vacations. We have fun. We're doing great. Yeah. So, I don't, in a great way, like perfectionists of us are like, okay, now that I'm starting to do this, I should never compare and despair. This is my job. I'm a life coach for moms. I should have zero compare and despair. Right, no. Right.
Yeah, it definitely never goes away. I hate like the current algorithm on Instagram because it'll like throw in accounts that you don't follow. And when you're just like scrolling and one of the ones that's like constantly in my feed right now that I don't follow. And she's probably a really nice mom. She's a mom of four also. And she, like, her niche is just, like, her, like, how-tos, the day in the life. Like, here's my morning routine, you know, like, those kind of things. And I love those. But I get into that compare and despair with, like, this woman. She's, like, she gets up at 4 a.m. and she's, like, running and she's working out. She's super fit. And I'm just, like, that will never be me. Not that I don't know, whatever. But – yeah, you just like, you have to find a way to redirect some of those thoughts. And it's not that they're not going to come up. It's just how do we quiet them and make the other voice louder?
Yeah. And it's remembering all, like building up the evidence as to why you and I, we are amazing as we are. I am fit enough. Same. My family, we are good enough, right? Like we, what I am doing is enough.
Yes. I totally, and I live that, you know what I mean? But some of those scrolls will get you. So be mindful out there, mamas. Stephanie, thank you so much for having this conversation with me. Can you tell my listeners where they can find you and some of your services in case they are struggling with some of this compare and despair?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at Stephanie.Rosenfield. You can shoot me a DM and say that you heard me on this show. I also have podcasts. It's called The 5-Minute Shift for Moms, and they're quick 5-minute tips that you can listen to quickly and implement immediately. And then if you're interested in other free resources or scheduling a free consult, you can go to StephanieRCoaching.com/consult.
perfect. All of those will be linked in the description of this podcast. So make sure that you go give Stephanie a follow. Stephanie, thank you again for helping me support you, the mother.
Thank you for having me, Abby.